This week we're chatting with Pat Fouquet, and we've also got Sam Levin's Cool Mac Picks. My Mac Podcast 187.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it's another week. We're only a couple days away from the WWDC when all of our lives are going to change forever. Don't you agree, Guy Searle?
Oh, I don't know if they'll change forever, but...
Forever and ever. It's going to be a brand new world. The tech gods of California are going to shine down on us, and we're going to be better for it.
I know my wallet hand is starting to shake a little bit.
It's starting to, that palm starting to twitch over there across the pond in the UK, right, David?
I'm still feeling a little bit underwhelmed at the moment.
A little underwhelmed? Is it just simply because there's no way Apple could meet your expectations or the expectations that all the rumor sites have popped up lately with?
I think that there's no coherence in the rumors this time around, so consequently I'm just waiting to see what comes out and see whether Steve's going to be having a good day or a bad day.
I think we're all going to be treated with a 42-inch tablet computer. That's what it is.
It fits in your pocket.
That fits in your pocket, folds up real nice, you know. We're joined this week from Pat Fouquet. She's with Mac Mouse Calls, and she's also with Dr. Bot Consulting. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. We want to thank you very much for being on the show and injecting a little bit of estrogen in here, because we definitely need that occasionally.
Definitely provide that.
So, Mac Mouse Calls, let's talk about that for a little bit. What is Mac Mouse Calls, and why should our listeners go check it out? Because I'm going to tell them right now that they're going to want to, because I enjoy the site.
Well, I work with Bob Levitis, and we get a lot of customers from around the world, and we get a lot of questions that we can't charge people to answer. I mean, it's so simple. Or we get things that we just need to tell people a little bit more. So Mac Mouse Calls is where we do, or where I do those kind of questions. Bob uses his columns. I use the blog. And probably the hallmark of the blog is that every step is there with a screenshot.
That's very important. A lot of people are visual learners.
Exactly. I never talk about a menu without showing you what menu I'm talking about.
That's awesome. I wish more websites did that. And it really doesn't cost any more, but it does take a little bit more time when you're preparing a piece to post. But it makes all the difference when you can physically see or visually see what the person's talking about. Like your latest is Aging Eyes and Tiny Type on the Web and in Safari, which is a big deal. I've got a couple of clients that are getting up in age, and they can't stand browsing the internet because they can't read anything. It's just too small.
Exactly. That's one that I had a client who said, you know, I can't do it anymore. And lo and behold, I discovered something that I don't know how long it's been there. But I'm sure that most people don't realize that you can set a preference so that type never gets any smaller unless it's picture type.
I think I said Dr. Bot Consulting, didn't I?
You did.
I meant Dr. Matt Consulting.
Yeah, Dr. Bob.
Yeah, I don't know where the Dr. Bot thing came from other than that they've been, you know, a supporter of the show in the past, so I kind of had that under my mind. So I apologize for that. Actually, Bob Levitis was one of the very first guests that we chatted with on Skype on this podcast shortly before Tiger came out. So we've got a long history with Dr. Matt Consulting, and I blow the name. Go figure.
You know that he enjoyed being on the show, and he hopes to do another one sometime with you guys.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Poor
so,
guy.
So he is a glutton for punishment.
He is, definitely.
Definitely. Hey, he spent all weekend here in D.C. last weekend doing some conferences for our user group, Washington Apple Pie. And if he's silly enough to come to D.C.
Yeah, you need to go to more of those meetings there, Guy.
Yeah, well, I haven't been to, because I am a member, and I've been a member now for well over 10 years. And I'm not able to make it to the monthly meetings like I should.
Pat, you know why that is? Not enough free hot dogs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've kept too many of those.
That's right. Well, free hot dogs draws them in.
But not hot dogs.
They actually had me come and do a talk on podcasting back, I guess it was a little more than a year ago.
Well, that would explain why you haven't been back.
Yeah.
We actually have that as a podcast up on our site, Guy.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, me too.
Did a great job. Everybody enjoyed it. It was a good event.
So, Pat, what kind of Mac are you running right now?
Well, right now I'm on my 17-inch MacBook Pro, and sitting beside me is my 20-inch iMac, both Intel. And my secondary monitor is a little Vizio HDTV.
Ah, that's nice.
How well does that work?
It works very well. The only problem is that it's no longer a TV. I bought iTV for the little Mac, iMac, and now it just is a monitor.
Yeah, it works good for that. Obviously, a kind of expensive side cart.
Actually, it was only about $300.
Well, that's not too bad.
So, yeah, I think it's a good use of money.
What was your very first Mac that you bought?
I won my first Mac.
You won it?
Won it.
That's amazing.
I did a lot in the education community and did a lot with Apple IIgs, and was presenting at an educational conference as a volunteer. And they had this big drawing, and my name was drawn, and I won a PowerBook 100. And that was the year before we started using them in school. Actually, it was the summer before, so it was wonderful because I really learned a lot in that time, making it ready to, you know, to transition. And I can stay in the education community until Apple called me and said, we want you to be one of those performer reps.
Ah.
So
that was a while ago, but those were heady times to be an Apple user.
It was, what, 92, 93?
Yes.
Now, were you already? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, were you already involved with the Washington Apple Pie at that point?
Yes. I've been a member of the Pie twice. Right after I first joined it, they had some internal struggles, and they lost a lot of new members. And then things calmed down, and we all came back. All the guys that got scared away.
There was a lot of people at the time. I mean, for a long time, it looked like Apple was going to go out of business. And I knew personally a lot of people who jumped over to the PC thinking, well, Apple's not going to be around long enough. I need a new computer. I'm not going to buy another Mac. I'm going to go the PC route because it seems like that's, you know, what everyone's using. But now it's going just the opposite. And I'm curious how many of the people that contact Dr. Mac Consulting, I got it right that time, are new Mac users.
It is amazing. We probably see 3 to 4 new Mac users every week.
And
some of them are new to the computer, but most of them are Windows users who are making a conversion. Some of them very timidly, and some of them just dive right in.
It's surprising how many people just dive right in and then learn it on their own. I mean, through trial and error. I am surprised how many people do that.
Yeah, we tend to get the calls when they can't get Parallels to do quite right. People have trouble getting their printers set up.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of calls with people who are now trying to integrate Trios and Blackberries and people who just have plain old questions. How do I do this, and what is that? So, hey, we take them all.
What's your favorite kind of chat when you have with people?
Probably that the troubleshooting thing where they're sure their computer is fried and I can get it fixed in about 15 minutes. Because people really think that, oh my gosh, they're going to have to pay a lot. And most problems are pretty fixable pretty quickly.
Well, yeah. And one nice thing that the Apple Pie, I think they still do it, the Tuesday night clinic?
Yes, we still do have Tuesday night clinic. Unfortunately, most of our customers are not in this area. They're around the world.
Right.
But when we do have somebody local and they have older computers, we always send them up to the Pie because they're really good at the older stuff. They don't like to do hardware repairs on computers that are in warranty status. But certainly if you have an older computer, they're great.
Yeah, you have the, for people who don't know what we're talking about, the Washington Apple Pi, if you live in the D.C. area, it's really not that expensive to join the Washington Apple Pi. And one of the benefits you'll get from being a member is if you're having a problem with your computer, every Tuesday night at their offices in Bethesda, they have a bunch of guys there that really know their way around a Mac, and they will take it to the nth degree to find out what your problem is. And other than a slight donation, whether they're able to fix your problem or not, it's completely free and just a bunch of really, really great guys.
Yeah, we do depend on those donations to help run the club, but you're certainly less expensive than going to somebody else usually. And the local shops, when they don't have the parts or the expertise to work on the older computers, we're there to do it.
So how does the Dr. Mac consulting work? Obviously, most of your clients are probably many, many, many miles away from you, maybe even across the other side of the planet, right?
Very true. Every once in a while, I get to meet somebody who calls, particularly like at Macworld. I met several people this last year. But for the most part, they hear about us. Either Bob's in a podcast, or they've read one of his books, or they've been to Mac Mouse calls, or whatever. And they call us, and we use a piece of software from Most Consulting that's called Mac Helpmate, and it allows us to see their computer. And, of course, if you can see their computer, and I can also work their mouse and their keyboard, you can usually fix the computer if it's a software issue. And, of course, 99% of all issues are software-based.
Do you think that iChat will change a little of that? With the new iChat, you can actually do a lot of that built right into the program.
Yes, and when they have 10.5, we often use iChat, but we find that many of our clients to start don't have an iChat account, and so I often set up that iChat account so that we can either use the Most software or iChat, or if they have multiple computers, we can actually work between two computers at the same time, which is sort of an interesting thing.
That's cool.
Works well.
So how did you meet Bob?
He called me. I didn't call him.
So how did he hear about you then?
I've never really asked him. It was really one of those funny things. I got the call, and I got a call from him, and also when we first started doing the business, Ted Lando was also involved, but I got this call, and it was like hero worship. I was sort of tongue-tied, and then he said, we'd like you to work with us, and I was honored, and I tried to prove my worth, and I'm still around, so I guess I did a good job.
Must be doing something right.
Yeah, and probably the biggest thing for us is patience. When you're having problems, you just need somebody to just, no matter what happens, just to be patient. And I've got 5 kids and 6 grandkids, and I think I have a lot of patience.
Yeah, I can identify with that. So, you've already mentioned how much you satisfaction you get from helping people, but do you ever get calls where you feel that no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to help the person out, and you're going to have to say I'm sorry, I can't help you, and that might be for all sorts of reasons, the fact that they're not prepared to listen to you, or alternatively their system just might be in a really strange place.
If they'll be patient, I've never had anyone that we couldn't get them down to where we knew exactly what was wrong. If it was a hardware issue, we'll often call Apple with them and do that conference call with Apple and talk to the techs there and make sure that they understand what the problem is.
Yeah, because that's pretty hard for novice users to explain to Apple what the problem is. Usually you get the call to the tech help at Apple, and it's, have you tried rebooting? And have you, you know, with you guys, I got to imagine you can cut right through all that, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I can be talking to Apple and see their computer and have the person on the phone, too. And so we can get it down to where we, when they leave us, they've got that ticket number to take it into the Apple store, or Apple's sending them a box if it's a hardware issue. But, you know, the thing is, people buy AppleCare. But when there's a problem, there are some procedures that they really need to go through. They can't just send the box just because you say, my computer's got a problem, because most problems are software.
Yeah, I've got a hardware problem myself with my new iMac. I'm getting screen burn-in. I have found that the cure for it, until I take it into Apple, is to open up a text document and just fill the entire screen with white, and it tends to burn out, the burn-in. And that cures it for a little bit, but it comes back. So, in a problem like that, obviously I'm going to have to take the computer back to Apple. Would you suggest that I erase the hard drive before I take it into Apple, and then just when I get the machine back or get a replacement machine, what would your suggestion be? Just to use Time Machine to back it back up, or Super Duper, or... Because I don't like the idea of taking my computer into Apple and all my...
All your stuff is there.
Everything is on the hard drive, yeah.
Well, I would definitely not suggest File Vault. Typically, when we've got people with sensitive information on their computer and they really want to keep it on the computer, we suggest that they make a disk image, and they put a password on that disk image, throw their files into that disk image, and then there's no way that you can get them out unless you have the password. Apple won't help you, and nobody else can help you.
You know, I've heard too many horror stories of someone picking up a used Mac or a used PC and finding the last person who owned it, their data is actually still on it.
Right, but if it's an encrypted disk image, they can't get to it. Same thing is if you lock up your Quicken data. I don't know if you've ever had to call into it to get Quicken data back, but you jump through so many hoops. It's definitely secure. I keep my passwords and stuff in a FileMaker Pro database, and I know that FileMaker will not...
That's what I do as well. I use FileMaker Pro for almost all my billing. I just, yeah, I could use something like Quicken, or, but I just kind of like creating my own databases and using a program like that. That way I could really, really control it. And if something's complex, I can write a script, or I can jump online and find a script that somebody else has already written. FileMaker has a huge user-based community out there.
Exactly. But, you know, do I trust people at Apple? Yes. If I know that they're going to replace my hard drive, do I back off the data? Or do I encrypt it? Yeah. Most of the time, I'm not sending mine in for a hardware issue. It's something else. But it never hurts to think about where your data's going. And it's not that hard to back it up with Time Machine, erase that drive, and then to restore it with Time Machine.
That's my plan.
And
I think I might actually do both. I think I might go out and spring. I do have a Time Machine or a time capsule on here. It's a 1 terabyte, but I've got like 5 or 6 different machines that back up to it, so I'm not sure how much space is on it right now. But I am thinking about picking up another like 500 gig hard drive, backing everything up to that, making an image of my computer, backing it up to that, and then erasing this completely. Putting a fresh, you know, 10.5.3 and send it into Apple that way, while driving it up to the local Apple store. But it does make me nervous. Not that I have anything so sensitive on my computer that, you know, somebody could ruin me if they got a hold of it. But still, I just don't like the idea of my data could still be out there on some hard drive that Apple happens to replace. But speaking of my problem, Pat, have you heard of anybody else having screen burn-in? Because I thought this was a problem that went away a long time ago. So I was quite shocked to see it starting to develop on this 24-inch iMac.
You know, we haven't had any people complaining of screen burn-in. And, of course, my thing is, before I ever send a computer like that to Apple, always reformat the hard drive and reinstall. And just, you know, basic install to see if it is a software issue, because it's amazing the things that can happen that you think are hardware that are just really software.
Well, I tell you, when I reboot the machine, when you see the blue screen as it's, or the gray screen as it's getting ready, I can still see my email.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a hardware issue. And the big thing is, if you've got a hardware issue, get it in. And if it doesn't get fixed, get it in again quickly. And if it doesn't get fixed the third time, you know, replace the equipment with the same level of equipment that it was when you bought it.
Yep. So that means because mine was a 24-inch, 2.8 gigahertz, the Extreme Mac from 6 months ago, that was the top machine, they would probably give me a 24-inch iMac with a 3-gigabyte chip.
Exactly.
So, and I kind of like that idea. I am having a little bit of buyer's remorse. This is the first iMac I've owned. Well, I can't say that. I owned a second-generation iMac as well, but it was for my wife. And it was the first machine that we owned in this house that could run Mac OS X, which is kind of the reason I got it. I didn't want to put that on my... I didn't want to run OS X beta on my production machine, so I'll put it on my wife's machine. She won't care. and it worked fine, too. But I kind of wish at this point that I would have simply gone with a Mac Pro rather than an iMac, because I am running into expandability issues now that I didn't really think I would.
Yep.
I really do miss not having a second hard drive in the machine. With my G5, I had two internal hard drives. They both were up to date with the OS. If I was having a problem with one, simply hold down the Option key, reboot to the other hard drive, and usually everything was good to go. And then I could run, you know, Disk Warrior or whatever on the other hard drive.
See, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was pretty much done.
I have seven hard drives hanging off the back of this little iMac.
Well, so do I. That's the problem. But, you know, only one of them are actually able to boot up this iMac. And when I do it that way, going through the FireWire port, it's just dog slow. And I just don't have the patience.
400 or 800?
It's a 400. It's an iMac, so I don't have
it. Is it FireWire 400 or 800?
It's a FireWire 400.
See, you need an 800. And the thing is, when you buy 800s and 400s, use that 800 port for all of your 800 drives, and the 400s, don't mix them on the same bus.
But does the iMac, I don't even remember, does the iMac have an 800 port?
Yeah.
The newer ones do.
Yours definitely does.
The 2.16 that I have, I don't believe it does have a FireWire 800. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Yes, it does.
It's silver and black, it has FireWire 800.
Yep, it does. It is.
Mine's
white. I've got it. I have to check that out. I never even thought about it, to be honest. I used to have that FireWire 800 port on the G5, and that was the only thing on that chain. But I haven't, you know, with the new iMac, because I only have a limited number of ports on the thing, everything is kind of daisy-chained together, so it's definitely going through the slowest, which is going to be the FireWire 400.
Yeah, so get an 800 and make your boot disk off that. It's wonderful.
Well, if Apple does eventually exchange it, because I can't imagine they're going to fix this machine. I think it would probably cost them more to give me a brand new screen in this than it would just to give me a brand new machine.
More than likely.
But here's the problem. I have to let it burn in again pretty good before I take it in. Otherwise, I'm going to say, well, I don't see any burn in, because I'm getting rid of the burn in. Simply, like I said, I open up a text edit document and I just fill the entire screen with that page, and the white will overlap the burn in.
But how long does the burn in last? I mean, if you've got your email,
it lasts for good unless I do the whiteout trick for, you know, a couple days.
Wow! So overnight you could turn the machine off and it'll be there in the morning.
Yep.
Interesting.
That sounds like it's pretty broken.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, too, and it's really annoying to me. My wife can't see it, but I see it very, very well. And I think, you know, if you're sitting in front of that machine for so long, you're going to notice it. So I think this is one that I just have to put a couple hours together to call Apple and take it up to the Grand Rapids or the Ann Arbor store and get it switched. You know what? Jeez. We're having a little bit of a network issue right now. We're going to have to restart my Skype connection. So, Pat, I want to thank you very much for being on the show this week. And where can people find out more about you?
Go to MacMouseCalls.com.
And that music means it's time for the Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin. Hello, Sam.
Hey, how you doing, Tim?
I'm not practicing my Russian, but I know you're going to have to really, really soon, right?
I'm going to head to the Russian consulate in San Francisco tonight. Yeah, a little James Bond. There's a company that's showing off their online gaming products, and I know the PR company that's doing it. I don't know how they did it, but how they got involved with the Russian consulate, but there's going to be vodka and gaming that takes place, so I can't
vodka
wait.
Vodka and software. That's a volatile mix, I think.
Exactly. So I'll let you know how that goes. I'll bring my
Levin. Sam Levin.
So
what do we got for the Cool Mac Picks this week, Sam?
Well, I thought we would start off with Olive's Jawbone, and remember it's called the New Jawbone. They don't like it called Jawbone 2, The Return of Jawbone. It's the new Jawbone. I mean, it's new and improved. It's slimmer. It's lighter. It's smaller. I like it better because it's much more compact, and they opened up the, with the earbud, they opened that up so that there's,
more sound coming through?
I believe it. There's more holes in that earbud area, so I think that that improves clarity to some extent. The overall design is shrunk about 50%.
Wow.
I think it's the same price, $129. It's available in black right now. They'll have two other color patterns in the next month that they'll
gold
ship.
Gold and silver?
Yeah, they call it rose and black. One's called rose and black. It's on the site. If you go to jawbone.com, it shows the three different color variations. And they've done a very nice job in a compact design. And it's got, of course, its hallmark is its noise cancellation. And that is, it just works flawlessly. By the way, it works with the iPhone. It works with Mac, PC, Skype, iChat, all your voice messaging products that you use on your Mac or PC. But with the iPhone, you turn on Bluetooth, pairs almost immediately, and it's a really well-made product. So that's,
you know what I like about it, Sam? I like that it looks more like jewelry than some cyborg implant that's some blinking blue thing that you see all the time.
Right.
I like the Jawbone's look. It looks like fashion more than it looks
right.
like technology.
Right. They spent time on the aesthetics. I think they've done probably one of the best jobs. I still think that, I would like to see a few other enhancements, using USB Mini as its connector instead of proprietary connector for its power. I'd like to see that. And just overall, give me a small cable as an option. I'll buy it so that if I travel, I don't need, a 3-4 foot cable. That's all. But that's a minor gripe. But the product works really well. The new Jawbone works, and I love it. And I use it every time I get in the car. And as of July, California becomes a hands-free state. So it's by law, you have to use a hand-free device. You can't use your phone or iPhone up to your ear.
Right.
So,
I kind of like that law. I mean, that's not the law here in Michigan, but I've seen so many idiot people pull out in traffic because they've got their stupid cell phone stuck to the side of their face, not paying any attention at all. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So wireless Bluetooth is, I think, probably the way to go.
I think it's the best way right now, and they've done a really nice job. So that's called the new Jawbone from Olive. And what follows that is, our next Cool Mac Picks, Griffin Technologies window seat. And
this thing scares me, Sam.
It's basically a suction cup holder for your iPhone. Actually, it works with both iPod Touch and iPhone that connects to your window. Just like, remember the notepads that people used to stick on their windshield?
Yes, but a notepad wasn't $500.
Right. And now you can stick your iPhone on it. But in case you don't want to connect it to the window, they do make a plastic little dial that you can insert it into your cup holder and place it into that area in case you don't want it in front of you. So I'm going to test out both areas. I tried yesterday the windshield. It works perfect. It's not expensive at all.
No, it's $30.
$30, and it does exactly what they say it will do. Comes with a audio jack cable, so you can plug your iPhone into other things in case you need that cable. But there's really no need. Once you use a Jawbone, for example, and your window seat, you've got it made. It's a perfect combination.
It looks pretty cool. I don't know. I've never trusted anything that's stuck to my window to hold an iPod, because they had stuff like this in the past, not just Griffin, but other companies that, you know, it would suction cup to your glass, and then that's where you put your iPod. And it just always made me nervous.
Right. Well, I tested it for about 5 hours. It didn't come off.
And that's in the hot California sun, too.
It's hot. It's still on there right now. I'm leaving it on there just to see and test it. But I'm going to test it in the cup holder as well, because I'd like to see the difference, because, you know, you don't want to sit there and start messing with the iPhone while you're driving. It's right. A distraction. So you have to be aware of that when you're driving. So, and, you know, people are always distracted on their phones anyway. So this is just another way to get distracted. But it does what it says it does. I mean, it works the way it says it does. So I like it. There's nothing else quite like that on the market.
It swivels, and it's got swivels. Is it a pretty good angle there that you could really adjust it pretty well?
It comes with an extension bracket, which I'm using because of the slope of my windshield on the Prius. So you can swivel it many different ways. It works. It just works. What can I say? It's called Griffin's Window Seat, and we've listed the URL on our website, so check that out. And then lastly, it's our new case from Casemate, and we all know Casemate for their cool, beautiful leather cases, but they've come out with a new version of their Naked. It's called the Naked Case for the iPhone, and this just started shipping, and it's really cool. You guys will all get them. We're going to have I'll be able to see it at WWDC. We'll have the new ones there. And it basically covers the entire case, front and back. The front has an electrostatic acrylic film. It's very, very thin, and it allows you to use the iPhone while it's covered.
We saw some of the products that did something similar at the Macworld Expo. I believe you were with us at that, David Cohen. I know you're still on the line.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of something that completely covers the iPhone's front.
Right.
So, you know, I haven't scratched my iPhone screen yet, but that is just a major concern of mine.
Well, it's a major concern, definitely.
Yeah, particularly the iPhone on the edges, the aluminum sort of edges, which are kind of polished. The glass is quite scratch resistant, but that metal surround around that will pick up scratches quite easily, I found. And most film protectors and everything you put on the iPhone won't help you with those, because they don't go right to the edge. So something like this would be ideal.
Well, you're absolutely correct, but also you have to take in consideration iPhone gaming that is just about to be announced. And when that happens, a lot of people are going to be using that screen. I would say it's just going to change how they use that screen, as well as people that are eating and their fingers are dirty and messed up. So I think this will protect the screen, even though, you know, it's scratch resistant. Ask someone that's dropped it. Aren't you the guy that's dropped your iPod in the garden?
Yeah,
that would be you, David.
Yeah, that's right. I dropped my Nano, and in fact, I did drop my iPhone for the first time ever last week. Yeah. Now, it was actually in a different Casemate case, so it survived the experience pretty much unmarked. But, you know, as soon as you do it, you think, oh, God, how can I have done that, you know?
I know. And
you know,
both,
Sam,
go ahead.
Casemate is a relatively new company. I mean, they weren't around 5 years ago, and they've really come out of nowhere and is just starting to dominate the portable device cases.
Well, they're doing a few things right, and they're doing them really right. They're targeting Apple-specific products and peripherals, meaning MacBook, MacBook Pro, iPod, and iPhone, and iPod Touch, of course. So that's their core target, and they understand that audience very well. They also have a few products for the BlackBerry, and they're great products. They're the same products for the iPhone, except it's designed for, you know, the BlackBerry-type products. And they just understand design, how to build really good quality products for these peripherals, as well as they've come out with a new clear armor covering for the iPhone. So speaking of scratch resistant, once this is covered, once your iPhone is covered with this, you can do anything to it, meaning you can throw it in your bag and keys can hit it, anything like that, and it's completely scratch resistant. So that's their latest announcement and shipping product as well. It's been shipping for the last week and a half.
Naked case for the Apple iPhone runs $34.99, and of course we will have links on show. What show is this? 187. And eventually you'll be able to go up to mymac.com/coolmacpics. We're going to have that URL. It's under construction right now, but hopefully within a week or two we'll have that launched. And you'll find the links to everything that you've ever said on any show that you've been on here.
So. That's great, because a lot of people can go back and look for prior shows and things that we've discussed. But we're going to do giveaways probably starting the next 1 to 3 weeks and start giving away Casemate stuff, some other companies as well. But Casemate, they're great to work with, and they make great products. So we'll do that. We'll do possibly some giveaways with Jawbone. We'll see. That's high-ticket item stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Sam, next week is the big week for all the iPhone developers out there. I know you're going to be covering the event. So the next time we see you, it may be a totally different ballgame. Are you excited?
I'm excited. I'll be at the Steve Note, as we call it. The keynote at WWDC. I suspect they will announce a new iPhone. That's what everyone is surmising. And also, they'll show the new 2.0 software. They're wondering if the App Store will be open. But I think it will all be shown. Does it ship? I'm not sure. But also, we'll have some new announcements. I can't talk about it because I'm embargoed from one company that basically will allow you to do blogging real-time on your iPhone. And I just saw it yesterday, and you will dig it. For all of you guys that want to blog, this is the product for you. So I'll be able to talk about it next Tuesday or Tuesday at midnight. That's when it becomes free to talk.
Well, we look forward to hearing from you next week, Sam. You have a good week.
Hey, thanks, guys.
And we are back after our little interference with the network. Looks like it's working again, and we're also joined now by Lee Givens. Hello, Lee.
Hey, Tim.
So are you going out to the Worldwide Developers Conference next week?
Yeah, I'm getting my stuff together, getting all the things that we're bringing out, getting all my shirts together, and, you know, you got to get all your logo shirts and getting my bags packed, hitting the road, I think, 5 a.m. on Saturday.
So do you think that this is going to be the beginning of something wonderful for iPhone, iPod Touch users, possibly a new hardware device? What are you looking forward to the most there?
Well, I tell everybody that I look at this as an historic time. I think the biggest thing that Apple's going to put out is not the 3G iPhone. My thing is the 2.0 OS and the App Store.
I agree with you, by the way.
I mean, there's nothing bigger right now, in my opinion, than third-party apps for the iPhone.
Do you think that this is going to position Apple in the same realm as, say, Nintendo's DS? Because I've been reading a lot of commentary online about just that Nintendo really doesn't know what's coming down the road at it, that the Nintendo DS, as popular as it is, you have to go to the store to buy the software to put the little disc in and play it like that. But with the iPhone, you're not going to have to do that. Do you think Apple is positioning themselves there?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of applications. You know, there's like Brain Age and things like that could make it over to the iPhone really easily. I think there's still going to be a market for the DS because of the cost and not having to have a contract, right. Things like that. But I think with the iPod Touch and with the iPod, Apple's going to have a pretty nice gaming platform.
Do you think, Guy, do you think that with the iPhone 2.0 software coming out, which obviously is going to run on the Touch as well, that the days for the regular iPod is marked, that that product is going to go bye-bye?
Yeah, well, I think the Classic is definitely, we're getting near end of life for the Classic. I think the Nano and the, God, help me here.
The Nano and the what?
The little one.
The Shuffle.
Yeah, they're going to stay around. The Shuffle is just a, you know, a little tiny player. It's got a nice price point. The Nano is for people that just want to have something they can, you know, stick in their pocket and, you know, grab and go kind of thing.
Yeah, but do you think that that's simply because of the price point? That if the Touch, if they made a Touch roughly around the same cost, that it would kill the sale of the Nano as well?
I don't necessarily think it's a matter of cost, but of size. That the Nano is perfectly positioned for somebody that wants to go jogging or wants to, you know, be on a treadmill and just have something in front of them that they can watch. I think the Nano, especially the new version of it, the only thing I could think of that they could improve on it would be to slightly increase the screen size, but we'll see what happens.
What do you think, David? What's the big thing going to be next week?
I think Lee's absolutely right. I think the 2.0 platform and the App Store is going to do to the cell phone software market what Apple did with iTunes to the music market. And I think, you know, the big cell phone companies are not going to know what's going to hit them, because all of a sudden selling software and upgrading your phone over the air is going to be something that's really easy to do, and it's no longer a geeky, techie thing that you have to do. I mean, one of the big things I think with the iPhone that people don't realize, because it's a combination of an iPod and a cell phone, is if you've ever tried to synchronize any other cell phone device to a computer, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
You know, you have to use funny applications, or you have to use third-party applications, and depending on exactly what cell phone model you've got and what carrier you're on and what computer you've got, it might work or it won't work. And all of that is just completely seamless with the iPhone, whether you're running on Windows or whether you're running on Mac. And I think it really is going to – all of a sudden people are going to say, well, I expect to be able to download – decent quality applications over the air to my cell phone, and they're going to say, the platform I can do that, well, there's the iPhone.
And have those apps be safe.
And we lost Guy Searle. His network just went kaplooey on us again.
Yeah.
It happens sometimes. It's one of those things that, you know, good old Skype, it needs to be bought out by a company other than eBay and make it into the powerhouse that it could be.
Yeah.
So, what do you think, other than, of course, Lee, you work for AOL, so you're hoping that iChat is going to be the big news next week. But other than taking yourself out of it, as far as AOL, what do you think is going to be the big software that everyone on the iPhone is going to go, whoa?
Well, you know, I'm sitting there looking at all the different applications that people are putting out, and I think that there's going to be some interesting applications where you could start doing things on the road that I would love to have, maybe some editing programs. Doing some quick things like, you know, capturing little videos and sending them to people. I'm really not sure. I'm just really looking forward to things, because I'm kind of I'm an old Palm person, and I've been kind of disappointed in the last 4 or 5 years with the lack of applications and the rich, you know, the ability to make rich applications. But one thing I can tell you is folks in the building, developers who develop on, say, like BlackBerry or Brew devices or, you know, mobile Java, when they see how fast one of our developers could, you know, put out a Cocoa app that runs on an iPhone, it's mind blowing.
Yeah, I got news for you. The Palm platform is going to be non-existent very, very soon.
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting. The Palm Centro gave Palm a little bump in the market share numbers this week, and Apple, because of the you know, unavailability of iPhones,
they took a hit.
Yeah, they took a small hit, and Palm's crowing out there saying, hey, look, we increased our market share. But unfortunately,
calm before the storm.
It gets wiped out on June 9th.
Yeah. Let's start with Lee. Do you think that there's going to be a brand new iPhone that's going to be significantly different than the current iPhone?
No, I think the form factor works really well. Apple, Steve Jobs is really, you know, when he came out and said, you know, we integrated the mouse into the computer. Then we got to the scroll wheel, the click wheel. The multi-touch interface, I think, is not going to vary much, but I think the internals, you know, Apple's probably going to work on some. All the things that, you know, people have been asking for, I think GPS and 3G are definitely going to be there. But I don't think Apple's going to move too far away from that. Apple, you know, especially if you looked at their packaging, if you look at the Mac Pro, the MacBook Pro, packaging is not as important to Apple. They used to change the packaging almost every 12 months. There would be some new you know, chassis built, but I think they're going to keep it the same now.
What do you think, David?
I agree. I think,
you know, supposed to argue, make the show more interesting. Lee's full of it. He don't know what he's talking about.
Okay, yeah, I think Lee's completely wrong. And I mean, there's been some shots bouncing around the web the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Photoshop stuff.
They're probably, you know, I suspect the case design will change slightly, but I think the iPhone is already pretty much the perfect size. It'll probably, you know, I mean, they'll have done some work on the internals. It'll be more power efficient. It'll probably be slimmer. The power efficiency and the slightly bigger battery inside will give it better battery life and help, you know, possibly power some new peripherals or new internals like GPS. But I think in terms of the screen size and the size of the device and the weight of the device, it's pretty much, you know, the right sort of form factor as it is. So I don't see it changing an awful lot. I mean, I find it very easy with mine to slip it into the breast pocket of my jacket when I'm wearing a suit. And you know, it stays in there. It won't fall out if I, you know, turn around or anything like that. And I think that people are very comfortable with the size of it. I can't see it radically changing at all. In terms of the 3G internals, I'm sure that's coming if it doesn't come with this release, and you know, that will be something that strengthens the phone, possibly over here in the European markets, where 3G is probably a bit more widely available than it is in the States. A lot of people are saying that the iPhone has not done as well over here as perhaps it could have done. So I'd be interested to see whether that stimulates demand. But to be honest with you, I think what's really going to stimulate demand is if they, you know, it looks like they're going to allow more carriers to offer it and to subsidize it and bring the price down a bit. And then it might explode.
Do you think, Lee, that the price of the iPhone is a barrier right now, that if the carriers do start subsidizing it, you're going to see a big increase and Apple may actually pass that 10 million mark for 2008?
Yeah, I think getting into 10 million for Apple this year is pretty easy. They're probably going to hit it way before the heat goes away and the humidity leaves us. But, yeah, I think Apple, you know, when you look at the 2.0 OS and the App Store, and I and with all these new carriers they're bringing online, I think the sort of exclusivity they've had is going to start getting to, they're going to be more traditional. They're going to start working on subsidies and taking people that direction. I think you have to broaden the market. There's, you know, in business school they teach you you get all the low hanging fruit. You know, take all the money off the table. And once you've done that, you have to look for you have to reposition your table to get more money. So they're probably going to be looking at opening up to a different market.
David, do you think we're going to see any new Macs next week?
I think they'll probably bump the odd machine. Depends what Intel's roadmap currently is. They've not done much with the Mac Pros for a while, so it wouldn't surprise me. You know, it sits nicely at WWDC to bump a Pro machine, either a Mac Pro or the MacBook Pros maybe. But I don't think it will be anything radical, because I don't think they want to divert attention away from the iPhone. To be honest, with this, it's all going to be around the App Store and the applications and the new platform. And so, if they were to also launch a sexy new Mac at the same time, then that would probably dilute the message. If they are going to do a new Mac, they would do it at a separate event, I think. And if it happened around about now, it could be in 2 weeks, 3 weeks time, maybe. But I suspect we'll be waiting to the you know, the end of the summer before we see anything new in the Mac platform ready for the back to school and the Christmas season.
Lee, we were talking off the air about Apple already seeding 10.5.4.
Yes.
What do you think that's all about?
Well, you know, we've been testing 10.5.3 pretty heavily for the last few months, and I think that there's probably some little areas that they want to focus on. But whenever Apple comes up with a release one after another, I think it's probably going to be used to introduce some new services or hardware or something like that may have been exposed previously, probably in a previous release. But I think it's you know, if you start taking a look at all the tea leaves, something that every Mac person likes to do, you look to the future, and I think Apple's pulled out of Apple Expo in Paris. It's something I heard. So Apple's looking at, you know, they weren't at NAB, so the opportunities for Apple to get their message out is becoming more, I think, controlled by Apple. So they're going to have more Apple events, but they're going to start using things like WWDC, not just to release, you know, OSs. They're going to start looking to release more products.
Do you think this has anything to do with the rumors that have been flying around lately that .Mac is finally getting the overhaul that we've been clamoring for, I don't know, 7 years now? And
I think this mobile me thing
has any traction?
I think something definitely is happening. I mean, taking .Mac, making a logical extension to mobile devices is perfect. I think a lot of people, when you're out and about, you're collecting information, collecting pictures, you're collecting all kinds of stuff. It'd be nice to be able to store that somewhere, and you could use it for, you know, live blogging. You could do a lot of things if you marry the great iPhone platform to a revamped .Mac thing. I think it'll work well.
I've been using Evernote, which is the note-taking application that now is effectively fully up in the cloud. So you have a client that you run on Mac or PC, and any data you put in that, whether it be images or text or web pages, gets saved up to the Evernote servers, and you can browse. You effectively get an online version of the client by just going to the website. It's really powerful. They do all sorts of clever server end stuff, like text recognition in your images, so you can search text out of your images, and the fact that you can just go wherever you are, you know, you've got access to that information, is really pretty strong. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's the direction Apple would want to take .Mac if they were to revamp it.
You should send me an invite to Evernote, by the way.
I will do that right away.
So what are you guys looking forward to the most? Something new from Apple, or kind of what you already expect, and, you know, just to get it out there and get working? What do you think, Lee? Anything big that you're looking forward to? Uh-oh. You still there, Lee? Are you there, David?
I'm still here.
I think we lost Lee.
Oh, I think, I don't know. Can you guys hear me now?
No, now we can.
Okay, good. I don't know what happened there. That was kind of weird.
It's Skype. Evil Skype. Everything's Skype's fault, by the way. If your computer crashes, it's Skype.
I'm pretty satisfied. I think that some of the rumors that are coming out about 10.6 and, you know, maybe Carbon being deprecated and, you know, the PowerPC being unsupported.
Do you think that's viable on Apple's part to drop PowerPC support this early, or do you think that now's probably the time? They haven't sold a PowerPC machine in over a year.
Yeah, a lot of people have to remember that, you know, the first Intel machines for developers came out in 2005.
Yep.
So we're getting close to the third year, but if you go back in Apple's history, they were still supporting the Apple II for a long, long time.
Yeah, but that was a different Apple. That was Apple Computer. This is Apple Incorporated.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think it helps out a lot of things. First of all, you don't have to worry about universal applications. They can finally pull a lot of the things that may be holding back applications in the, you know, with that are carbonized and go fully cocoa. I see a lot of upside, but I think right now, especially with the value that Macs hold, I think a lot of people are running, you know, some of the, you know, the colorful iMacs, and they want to stay with Apple, and I think it may be a little premature.
Do you think, though, that Apple wants to get those people off those old machines?
Yeah, definitely. I think they want to migrate everybody up. I think getting everybody on an Intel platform really help out with things, but I don't know. I think the PowerPC, especially if you take a look at like a dual G5 2 gigahertz, I think those machines are still pretty viable.
Yeah, they're very fast. I've got one that, if it wasn't, by the way, it doesn't look like it's a power supply issue. It looks like it's the motherboard on my old G5. So, if anybody's got a motherboard for a G5, let me know. I'm in the market. What do you think, David? Too early to drop PowerPC or?
I think I would disagree with Lee on what he says. I don't think it is too soon to drop support. I mean, what does it mean if they drop support for it in the next release of OS X. You still have Leopard. I was using Leopard on my 12-inch PowerBook G4 tonight. And, you know, with enough memory on an 867 megahertz machine, it runs fine. So that will still be the case when 10.6 is launched, and if they desupport PowerPC, then Leopard will still be there. And Leopard is a pretty fine operating system. It's got a lot of very, very nice features. So it's not like the PowerPC is kind of, you know, all of a sudden you can't run your software anymore.
Yeah.
So I also think as well, realistically, looking at the value for money equation nowadays between buying, you know, unless you're buying a very old, pretty cheap G4 machine, you spend just a few hundred dollars more and you can get yourself into a MacBook or a Mac Mini. And really, performance-wise, an Intel machine is so much faster and more powerful than any of the G4 or even the G5 machines. So I suspect Apple is saying, you know, to those users, they're saying, look, come with us to the Intel platform. It won't cost you a lot of money, and you'll really have a much, much finer computing experience than you have with the PowerPC platform. So it wouldn't surprise me at all, bearing in mind as well that, you know, even if 10.6 is announced and shown to developers next week, it's not actually going to ship as a purchasable product till probably next January at the earliest. So by that time, you know, we'll be three and a half years into the Intel regime, and I suspect it probably would. There will be complainers because whatever Apple does, there's always a section of the community who says, no, how dare you do that? But I, as somebody who owns a couple of G4 machines myself, I won't be disappointed if 10.6 is Intel only, put it that way.
I've already moved all my machines that I use on a daily basis over to Intel, an iMac, and a MacBook Pro. I do wish the G5 was still working. If the logic board wasn't fried on it, you know, we'd probably be recording this podcast on that machine. But as it is, the iMac's filling in very nicely. So, you know, I don't really care if Apple drops support for PowerPC. You know, I don't think 10.6 is going to come out next week. I don't think it's even going to come out this year. I think it's probably going to be early next year. And I think that's probably enough time to get those that are mission-critical machines that's still running PowerPC that has to run the latest version of, you know, CS3 or whatever. Those machines will still work, but it's time for those people to move on. G5s haven't been on sale now for, what, a year and a half, 2 years? It's been a while. So
you know, I think
it's time to move up.
Yeah, I think both of you guys are right, come to think about it, because Leopard still has a lot of life in it. I think they could do a dual path. You know, Leopard's at 10.5.3, maybe 10.5.4 soon, but it's got a lot of life.
Yeah, they took Tiger to what, 10.4.11?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that's, yeah, in fact, they just upgraded that just not too many months ago. So, yeah, they could keep Leopard going. Leopard's pretty stable as far as I'm concerned. I haven't had a lot of problems with it, so it's got a lot of life left in it.
Yeah, some of the rumors talk about, you know, a December release for 10.6, but
early.
I think the timing's fine. I think if they were going to drop the PowerPC, come to think about it, I wouldn't be weeping.
No, me neither. Otherworld Computing is obviously the sponsor for this podcast. We do want to talk about them for a minute. Yep, it's a commercial, but it's also an informative one. David, you picked something this week that I'm very interested in. I didn't know this product even existed. Now that I see it, I may actually spend $20 to pick it up.
Absolutely. When I was browsing through the site looking for something to talk about for this week, I came across this and I thought, you know, really what a great product this is. What it is effectively it's a USB converter for an XLR microphone. So if you want to get audio into your Mac, you can plug a 3.5mm jack into the sockets on the side of the Mac and get audio in that way. But whenever I've done that in the past, I've never been overly happy with the results. I don't know what it is, but I think the audio.
Well, it's converting it at that point. It's converting it to what am I talking about? It's not digital.
Exactly. It's got to take the analog signal and turn it into digital.
Thank you.
That's right. And I've, to be honest with you, I've never been, maybe it's an Intel machine thing, but I've never really been happy with the quality you get when you do that. I mean, for instance, at the moment, I'm talking on a headset with a pair of 3.5mm, plugs on the end, one for the earpiece and one for the microphone. But I have that plugged into a Griffin iMic, which is a device that plugs into the USB ports and does the conversion actually on the device, so that by the time it gets to the Mac and gets into the Mac subsystem, it's all digital.
Right, and the Mac doesn't have to convert that. exactly. over into a digital signal. Yep.
And, you know, if you've ever used GarageBand, you'll find that, you know, it's a pretty hefty program, and it does a lot of work, and you'll find it just works a lot better if it's working with a digital signal path end-to-end from the Mac. So what this device from Otherworld Computing does is effectively it allows you to plug any standard XLR, which is the kind of the bigger 3-pin microphone jack into this
which is
adapter.
What I use.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really if you want a really good beefy quality microphone.
The best microphones are not USB mics, they're XLR. Yeah,
exactly.
That may change eventually as computers, you know, saturate the audio market more and more and more, which is pretty much already the how it's working, but
yeah.
If you want a live performance type of microphone, somebody that would have a band, for instance, would use, that's all XLR.
Yeah, and even if you're doing just spoken stuff and just, you know, recording your kids around the house, you can pick up a good quality XLR microphone for not very much money, but the problem is there's no XLR ports on the Mac, so what you need is a converter, and what this is a very simple solution to effectively take that XLR microphone and turn it into a USB connected device that will plug straight to your Mac, and you'll be able to go straight to sound properties within your system preferences and be able to see that straight away and just feed it into whatever application you want. It's only $20, which means that for really, you know, $20 plus the cost of a microphone, and if you pick up a secondhand mic on eBay, you're talking very little money. You can get something that's going to sound absolutely amazing. And if you're doing any sort of audio work with your Mac and you want to record voice or music, then you're going to get much, much better results than with any other solution. I mean, and this little adapter, I mean, it's cheaper than an iMic, you know, so you can just add that into your hardware equation, and I think you'll get very satisfactory audio results. And for $20, I think it's got to be worth a go.
It's a heck of a price. One of the contributors of it, MyMac.com, and a listener of the podcast is Robert Hazarig, and he sent in a couple things this week. But one of them, he actually said, this is pretty cool over at Mac Sales, of course, Otherworld Computing. This is a $25 product. It's really, really neat. Did you know that on the 8-core or quad-core Mac Pro, you have an extra eSATA port inside the machine that's not being used by the 4 internal hard drives from Apple? It's got two extra ports.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
I didn't know that too.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Well, they sell a little cable that you can plug in, and then you can plug in an external eSATA drive to it. So you're effectively not using, you know, FireWire or USB. It's an eSATA drive, and it's going to have the same speeds as an internal drive, which means you could boot off one of these machines no problem.
Yeah, that's amazing, too. You could get full 3 gigabits per second through that.
Exactly. It's an awesome solution. I had no idea that the Mac Pros had that. Just two of them just sitting there, not doing anything.
Wow.
And you can't put anything else in there. You can't. 4 hard drives is all you're going to be able to put inside that machine. So if you need more, you've got an extra 2 right there. And this cable is only going to cost you $25. So we're going to put links up to Otherworld Computing for both of those products. Thanks very much, by the way, Robert, for sending that in. I thought that was really neat. Not just that they sell something like this, that I had no idea that this product even existed or that the Mac Core or the Mac Pros had that ability to do that. That's pretty neat. Awesome.
Very cool.
His other question was, when I plug in my iPhone to my Drive Plus Play, that's the Harman Kardon that I use to control my iPod and my iPhone in the car, do I get that interference sound? That Now, what that interference sound is the Edge network.
Yep.
And anybody who's had an iPhone and a speaker nearby or headphones, you've probably heard the sound.
Yeah.
And no, I don't get that interference using it with the Drive Plus Play. Now, if it's plugged in and someone calls me, my phone rings through the speakers, which is quite loud. And that's kind of nice, though, because I want to hear the phone ringing. So I don't get that interference.
You know what's interesting, Tim? When I plug my iPhone, we have a Densian, I think it's called an Ice Link. Yes. I've had it for a few years. But when I plug my iPhone into it, it says, you know, the device you're plugging into, you know, do you want me to turn, you know, does iPhone says, do you want to turn off the radio and go airport or airplane mode?
Yes, it does that too with the Drive Plus Play.
Yeah, so most of the time I turn off the radio because when calls do come in, I hate hearing the staticky noise.
Yes,
Yeah.
But I don't get the staticky noise at all.
Well, the thing is, most modern stuff now is shielded against the staticky noise. So the shielding to cover that is fairly hefty, but it's pretty well understood. So it, you know, all it needs is for people to appreciate that the speaker set or the device will be used with a phone, and they can put that shielding in place, and that will cut the noise out. But obviously older products don't tend to do that.
No, unfortunately. And maybe it's just that Harman-Kardon was forward thinking, and that, or they just not sensitive to that interference, because I don't have that problem at all.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I don't review any FM transmitters anymore because I refuse to use them. They suck. They all suck.
I sold mine.
Yeah. I don't use a cassette adapter because I don't have a cassette player in my car. Although those do work, but the cassettes tend to wear out. My wife has that problem right now. But I've been using the Harman-Kardon Drive Plus Play, both the first version and the brand new 2.0 version with the color screen. Man, that is the best solution. I know the Prius has this little box that you can get, and then you could control your iPhone or your iPod right through the little touchscreen on the Prius. And that's nice, too, but you're taking your eyes off the road. I like the Drive Plus Play because it has that little round knob. I put my hand on there. I can flip through songs. I can change playlists real easy, and the display is right on the top of my dash, so even if I have to take my eyes off the road for a second, I'm still looking at the road.
It's interesting you say that about the Prius. I mean, I have a Prius over here, and it must be because of EU regulations, but certainly over here, when you're actually moving, it locks most of the controls on that screen out, so you can't, you can't reprogram the sat nav while you're driving, for instance, and that apparently is because of EU regulations about taking your eyes off the road and fiddling with equipment while you're meant to be driving.
My Garmin will, if I'm actually driving and I try to change something on the Garmin, it warns me that I'm in motion and I have to click a special button to accept, and basically it's saying, are you accepting responsibility to kill yourself?
Danger of death button.
Yeah. It's basically saying, just pull over, dude. You can't read the screen while you're driving.
And it's quite right. I mean, when Sam was talking before about that that Griffin window thing, I was thinking to myself, because with my Prius has a 3.5mm jack connector, so that's how I use my iPhone in the car. It's plugged into that, and my Prius also has a Bluetooth adapter in the stereo, so when the phone rings, that will kick over and take the call, so I can take the call hands-free. But I was thinking to myself that product that Sam mentioned would actually get my iPhone off the seat next to me and up into my eye line, which might be quite useful when I'm actually driving. A more perfect solution would be something with an actual iPod dock connector that would allow me to charge the phone and do the whole thing.
That's why the Drive Plus Play, it charges my iPhone. I've never run out of juice on my iPhone because if I'm using it here at home, as soon as I'm done, I usually plug it back in. Or if I'm in the vehicle, it's plugged into the Drive Plus Play and it's giving it power, so it's kind of nice. Yeah. Although the cord isn't very long, so if I don't unplug it when I'm talking on the phone, I have to kind of lean over, and that's not a good thing when you're driving.
No.
Yeah, I think there's probably better shielding in the Drive Plus Play because
it must be.
Yeah, the density.
I don't get any of that interference.
Well, I think I installed that densing cable probably like 2002, so it's probably kind of early generation.
Yeah.
Because that noise is it's to do with the GSM frequencies, and of course, back in 2002, GSM wasn't as prevalent in the US as it is now. Actually, over here in Europe, we've always had GSM. That's been the only digital mobile telephony system we've ever had. So, I mean, I've been hearing that noise for about 15 years. So I'm very, very familiar with it, and back, the first Nokia phone I had back in the early 90s, I mean, just wherever you went, you could hear it in all sorts of, you could hear it in things that didn't even have speakers in. The interference was bad that back in those days. And even now, I mean, most hospitals in the UK they insist you turn your mobile phone off as soon as you go inside because they've seen...
Oh, they do that in the United States, too.
They've seen interference with the equipment from older phones. I don't think it's so much of a problem nowadays. The power control's a bit more effective.
Well, at least in the United States, I think it's more of a... Just turn your phone off. You're in a hospital.
Well, exactly, yeah. Funnily enough, my wife used to be a theatre nurse, and she said the only people in the hospitals who ever had their phones on were the surgeons, and they were frequently taking calls mid-operation.
Oh, that makes me feel very good.
Exactly.
going on up at mymac.com right now. We've got a lot of content. Have you noticed the changes? I mentioned that last week, didn't I? The little black things that we put up there. We're going to do that now. I think it looks a little better. The site is still in flux. We're still making a lot of changes. I don't have enough hours in the day, and I suck with HTML, so that's why it's taking longer than it should. But we are making some cosmetic changes, but right now we've got a lot of new content. We've got from Beccaria a book review for light and exposure for digital photographers, as well as a Layers, the complete guide to Photoshop's most powerful feature. I mean, isn't that why everybody gets a Photoshop, Lee?
Yeah,
for
definitely.
Layers? I mean, that's the whole thing right there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I still remember pre-Photoshop 3, layers. Boy, life was tough.
Yeah, absolutely. The first program like that I got into was called Colorit. Do you remember that program?
Definitely, definitely.
I loved Colorit. I thought, I will never need Photoshop with Colorit. But, of course, Colorit didn't do layers. And then I learned the joys of layers, and I never went back. Artie did a review of this thing called the Zephyr. It's kind of a cooling mechanism, this thing that you slap on the bottom of your MacBook. And it's like a giant heat sink. It doesn't look like something that I would want on my machine simply because I actually use my machine on my lap. But from his review, it sounds like it works. So if that's something that you're interested in, check out that review. Donnie did a review of Comic Life Magic. That's a cool program. That is something that everyone should check out. I've got the same version that he does, and that's a neat program. I really do like it. Have you guys checked out that?
I've used the older Comic Life. I've not used this particular version.
It's very slick.
Certainly Donna's review, the review made it look really exciting. You know,
it's a fun program to use. Just, you know, my kids like to use it. You know, they're making their own little comics with our pictures, and it's fun to watch what they come up with. You know, they're trying to figure out what the person in the picture is saying, and it's fun. There's been a few that they did that was clever enough that I actually printed out and, you know, hung them up on the refrigerator. So it's neat.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with David. I used the bundled version for a while. My kids love just making things. I mean,
yeah.
But after
that's
a while,
that's the fun thing about Mac, you know.
Yeah.
But the problem is with programs like this, after a while, the kids get bored.
Yeah.
And I think that this kind of program kind of has a shelf life on your computer, unless it's something that you're, you know, like making online cartoon things. You're going to use it for a few times and have a lot of fun with it. And it's probably going to be worth the price. But then after a while, you're going to be like, well, you know, I haven't used that in a while. But it is $45.
That's right. I tend to use Comic Life if I want to do personal cards for somebody for their birthday or for a family occasion, because you can take an actual, you know, family picture and then add you know, comments or thought bubbles to what people are saying, and actually make something
that's
pretty funny, and you know, families get a kick out of it, because, you know, particularly with the grandparents and all of that, they like to see pictures of the kids, and they much prefer that rather than you know, it's just a generic Hallmark card. So I like to do that.
Have to print. You can export it as a JPEG or a PDF and email it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The last product is something that if you're very security conscious, this may be something that you're very interested in. It uses biometrics for you to sign into your computer. In other words, it reads your fingerprints. Or is it fingerprints? I'm not quite sure how it works, to be honest.
I'm familiar with these systems. Basically, what it's doing is it doesn't read your actual fingerprint, but it reads your finger every time you swipe it over, and it scans particular key points on your finger and turns that into a cryptographic key, which you can then use to authorize you. And, you know, the end result is only your finger will open up your account on the machine.
And this is the Econ from UPEK, UPEC. Owen Rubin did the review. Check that out. That's listed right underneath this podcast. Speaking of this podcast, we're out of time. We'll be back next week. Are you going to be around for the show next week, Lee?
I'll be out in San Francisco, but maybe I could. I'll be bringing my USB headset, and let's see if we could get. I'll get on from WWDC.
Sounds cool. If you find any fun developers or anybody else, wrangle Steve Jobs to the ground, drag him over. And we'll talk to you next week. David, I'll see you next week, because I know you're not going to be at WWDC.
No, I won't be. It's a bit too far for me to travel for a day or two. But I'll be interested in the news, and I'll be taking advantage of the time zone difference to get the news as soon as it happens.
And so will I, unfortunately. And Guy Searle will be traveling to Florida, so we don't know if he'll have enough time to get to Larry's house to join us for the show. But I'm not going to the show either, and like we'll hear from Sam Levin, he is going to the show. So I don't know. It's going to be an exciting week. I'm looking forward to recording the show next week because we're going to have a whole lot of stuff to talk about, but we're out of time this week. We want to thank Other World Computing for their sponsoring of the show. Go up to mymac.com and click their banner at the very top. It's always going to be Mac sales for at least another year. So click that banner. That way they know you came from mymac.com. Thank you very much, Lee. Thank you very much, David.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
And, of course, Guy. He had to leave us early. Thank him. Thanks very much, Robert Hazrick, for sending in feedback. Pat Fokay. I got the name right. Ha, ha, ha. Check her out at MacMouseCalls.com. And, of course, Sam Levin's Cool Mac Picks. See you next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.